evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. In today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back.
To speak with our show hosts or guests during the live show, call us toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Everywhere else, call 001-858-268-3068.
Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Happy New Year, Sherry.
Happy New Year, Michael.
It's now 2006.
That's right. And so far, it's going very well.
It is going very well. Mm-hmm. Full of awarenesses and insights and practice.
Practice.
Spiritual practice.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's very exciting.
So what should we talk about today?
Conscious, compassionate awareness. Is that the right answer?
I think that's the right answer. Did I hear a phone? I think I heard a phone there. I'd like to welcome our first caller in 2006 to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Happy
Hi.
New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Thank you. What's going on?
Well, I need help with my addiction to watching DVDs and eating.
Mm.
I'm off work this week. And so I have a lot of time in the evening.
Why aren't you here with us in Carmel on retreat?
Well, the only reason I'm not is I'm saving my money to go to Assisi.
I see. Well, that is understandable. But I'll tell you, there is good food here, but no DVDs. So we would be saving you from yourself.
Well, that's true. That's
okay.
Very true.
So there you are. You're off work, and
mm-hmm.
And it's evening time, and it's winter. So evening time starts about 5:15.
Right.
And the thing that seems like the most happy producing plan of action is to eat and watch DVDs.
You're right, and if this happens over and over and over again, as you know, and then of course then. I feel terrible.
Now, why do you feel terrible?
Well, what happens is I eat too much, then I don't feel good physically, and then I start thinking, well, I'm fat, and here I did this again. I went unconscious again, and I know better, and so that's the cycle.
Okay, so the DVDs really aren't a problem.
The DVDs are not the problem, right. That's true.
Yeah, but they get lumped in. As if they were partially responsible for this.
Right. Yes, that's true.
And so what would it take, do you think, to... Because you enjoy the DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
And you enjoy eating.
Yes.
And do you take the time and make the effort to make good things for yourself to eat?
Sometimes, not usually.
Usually it's DVDs and kind of junk food and...
Junk food. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what feels like the setup.
Yes.
So could you add the piece, since you're not working, of making nice things for yourself to eat?
Yeah. Yeah. I could do that. Then okay. Maybe I would be full of good things and I wouldn't want to eat junk food.
Yeah. You suppose?
Yeah, I could.
And while you're doing this, you know, you could add a little experiment, too. And now, of course, you know, I don't believe in deprivation. I think deprivation leads us to bad things. I believe in compassionate self-discipline, but
mm-hmm.
not deprivation.
Okay.
So if you have a little kid, you want the little kid to eat a lot of vegetables and fruit and, you know, drink a lot of healthy water and all of that sort of thing. And having sweets can be a part of that, or having treats.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
We just don't want them to have only the treats, or they cease to be treats and they start being poison.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not a matter of depriving a person, but just doing it in a conscious, compassionate way that brings no regret.
Okay.
Yeah. So those two things I would encourage. One, making a whole production out of fixing the, you know, really thinking about what you would like to eat and get out your recipe books and decide on something that's going to be good and fix that for yourself and make sure that there's something, you know, dessertish or treatish or whatever in that.
Okay.
And then if there's a desire to have more than would really be good for a person,
mm-hmm.
ask yourself, what do I really want?
Mm-hmm.
What is this feeding?
Okay.
Hey, what is having this an attempt to satisfy?
Okay.
And just see. You know, since you're off work, my gosh, you can do all sorts of things. You can be journaling while you're doing this. You know, you can be doing the dominant, non-dominant hand. You know, so there's somebody who wants to just eat the, you know, you fixed a nice cake and somebody wants to eat the whole thing. And so to sit down and say, take the pen in your right hand and say, what's going on here? How come so much cake? And then switch hands and let the non-dominant hand write back what's going on.
Okay. And then the same would be if it comes up, okay, now I can go watch a DVD.
Well, sure. I mean, it
so
doesn't sound like DVDs are the problem.
It doesn't. They probably aren't. I've connected them to going the whole idea of using all of this to go unconscious.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the way to really thwart egocentric karmic conditioning. Stay conscious while you watch the DVD.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't tried that, actually.
Yeah. So you have a little experiment. And, you know, you could even be watching the DVD and then stopping periodically and checking in with yourself. You know, you could set a little timer. Have the timer go off. Check in with yourself. Where am I? Who am I? What's going on? Can I come back to center? Can I come back to the breath and then watch the DVD?
And maybe even journal on that?
Journal a little, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have a few days to do this so that you can report back next week.
Okay.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Talk
Bye-bye.
To you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, as you know, I have a stack of email questions here. So before that little phone thing bings again, let's jump in. Dear Sherry, I am an artist, and as many people know, a lot of great creativity comes from pain and suffering. Just look at some of the most memorable artists like Picasso, Mozart, John Lennon, or Jimi Hendrix. Though I don't enjoy pain and suffering, and I practice regularly, I have to ask, am I going to kill my deepest level of creativity? Regards from a listener.
Well, you know, I want to say this in the most respectful way that I can. In Zen, that whole thing is called horse pucky.
Horse pucky.
Horse pucky. It's just such propaganda from egocentric karmic conditioning, and people believe that. You know, it's like, you know, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second. I don't think that suffering produces great art. I think people who are suffering over art should get another line of work. I don't believe for a second that that's a requirement for anything that's great. I think there are some tortured people who are artists.
Mm-hmm.
There are tortured people who are doctors and lawyers and teachers and parents. And
yeah.
There are a lot of tortured people in the world. It doesn't necessarily result in greatness.
Yeah.
I think to get to the deepest part of oneself, to get to the essence of life and express that is what great art does. Great art that simply expresses the melodramatic, egocentric suffering of conditioned mind is going to appeal to exactly that audience.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it's going to be universal, and I don't think it's going to be lasting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you.
I should get some interesting comments on that little opinion.
Sherry, we have another caller. I'd like to welcome our next caller to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
Hi, this is Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, I called you a while back, a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
After my son died.
Uh-huh.
21 years old.
I remember.
Yeah. So I'm calling you today, but I'm not really sure why. Just wanted to.
How are you doing?
There are times when I feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, conditioned mind says, well, I can't be feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
I should always be feeling bad.
Yeah. How could you
feel
good when this awful thing has happened?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how could I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And isn't it interesting that that would be what conditioned mind would want to focus on?
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
I know from what I've learned from you that that is truly amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I'm grappling with. I mean, that's what I was grappling with before the fateful day that he had the accident.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's here in full force.
Yeah.
I can really see it.
Yeah. What in life that is anything that we would want to be related to would want us to suffer? What?
I don't know.
What could be going on with that?
Mm-hmm.
But if you loved him,
mm-hmm.
you would be miserable forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's the conditioned approach.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact,
excuse me.
Go ahead.
Well, and I've seen that in action. My aunt had a child who died, and so she just delved into alcohol and died 6 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving behind her other child, who was only 15.
Wow,
not pretty.
Yeah,
not,
yeah,
not at all.
And not really a tribute. Not
a tribute to the son who died, is
mm-hmm.
it? No.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're not believing that.
Well, I'm not, but you know, it does come up.
Sure.
And a lot of times, it comes up in reaction to. it comes up in reaction to my projections on other people about what they're thinking.
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and it can be true, can't it? There are a lot of people who share the same conditioning.
Mm-hmm. So,
culturally, there's a big belief that if something mm-hmm. bad happens, then you need to react to it in a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, forever.
Mm-hmm.
And
forever would do.
In the
mm-hmm.
civilized world,
mm-hmm.
For instance, if your husband died, you were expected to be in mourning and wear black for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't, you were definitely the wrong kind of person.
Yeah.
Now, since we have an industrialized society, you get 3 days.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's cruel, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we don't have a great tradition of death in our society, do we? I mean, we don't really know what to do.
Yeah, it seems like we don't have a very well-considered approach to death.
No.
Yeah.
I found myself being envious of any tradition that seemed to have a series of things that they did for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
And we had to kind of make it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you come from a particular religious tradition, then you have that,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of those kinds of steps built into it. You
mm-hmm.
know, that kind of walk a person through a process. There are activities that mark different stages in it. But for me, at least, it still doesn't speak to what's going on. It doesn't bring conscious, compassionate
mm-hmm.
awareness to
mm-hmm.
what's going on.
Oh, okay.
With the individual or with the family or with the community. And, of course, we have so little consciousness brought to death itself. Very
mm-hmm.
Very little preparation for death
mm-hmm.
or acceptance of death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot of magical thinking around it. I projected that a lot of people were thinking that if their son did this or didn't do that, that, you know, they would be safe from this happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that was a projection or not, but mm-hmm. it felt like it at the time.
Yeah. 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 So as parents, if our kids don't wind up in jail or having children when it's not time to have children mm-hmm. or that sort of thing, then we feel like we've done a good job. And
right.
we look around at the parents whose kids are not having that experience, and we all want to blame them
mm-hmm.
until we're the ones that it happens to.
Right.
And then suddenly, you know, we want to change the rules.
Yeah, yeah. If I were the right kind of person, this wouldn't have happened to my
yeah.
son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the result, of course, of not bringing consciousness to life. If we really wanted, well, I don't even know if that's the right direction for that, but it would be possible for us to look into these life situations and come to a clarity about
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
But we, as a conditioned society, we prefer beliefs, ignorance, and delusion. And so each person
wow.
kind of walks through life alone, uh-huh. you know, living in this world, kind of as you've described. If I'm just the right person, then things will go the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, of course, it's my fault.
Mm-hmm. And then I should suffer for the rest of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because this was
yeah,
this
should be
terrible that I did this.
Yeah. Instead yeah. of, now, wait a minute, what really goes on here?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, in awareness practice, that's what we're trying to do is answer that question of, now, wait a minute, what's really going on here?
Yeah.
And to stop and bring conscious awareness and attention to each aspect, each moment of life, and begin to see the beliefs and assumptions that are causing us to suffer
mm-hmm.
and how untrue and how unnecessary they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hired an organizer.
Oh, good.
This
That's
to me
right.
is a sequence here.
That's right.
Not a non sequitur.
Yeah, you have the room with the.
I had my laundry that I couldn't find anything, and but the truth is that, you know, I have piles of papers and stuff, and I really haven't paid any attention to the bills that have been coming in since October 22nd, so you can imagine what a mess that is. And so I just finally decided, after I talked to you last time, I'm going to hire an organizer.
Good for you.
Yeah, and she's really great. She's
mm-hmm.
very, you know, a really kind person.
Kind person, good at what she does.
Yeah.
And and doesn't have the judgment about you that your conditioned mind might
you
have.
You know, I don't care so much
mm-hmm.
that whether she's making any judgments or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think before I was so worried about that. You know, oh, she might come across a paper that speaks mm-hmm. ill of me. I mean, you know, and so I was so stalled out in dealing with these, with, you know, my general organization problems. And now I don't care. I see it as this is what's standing between me and some kind of clarity. I mean, physical clarity.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know about you, but for me in that kind of situation, it's like the worst has already happened.
Yeah, that's exactly.
So somebody's opinion is just so far down on the list of
right.
awful things that can happen to
yeah.
me. That,
and yet I'll wander into that thing about what I think other people's judgments are. I'll project that onto people. So it's not like I'm home free.
Oh,
but
no.
I'm just thinking, oh, this is, I'm just sort of walking in mayonnaise, you know, I can't.
That's a good image for it.
It is. It's
yep,
so, my mind is like mayonnaise. I can't,
mm-hmm.
You know, linear thinking is sort of beyond me sometimes. I'll mm-hmm. ask my husband, would you like a cup of tea? And then I don't even put the water on.
Mm-hmm.
He says, oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. Just,
and then, you know, 40 minutes later, he comes out to the kitchen and says,
it's
would
not
you
all
like
there.
A cup of tea?
Yeah.
So I know that I've apologized to him about that. And he's forgetting enough things that we've just decided it's okay.
You what?
We've decided right now it's okay if we're behaving that way.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll keep checking in.
So, well, I will.
Let us walk through the process with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your work so much. So, thank you.
Take good care of yourself.
Okay. I'm trying.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next on Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassion and awareness, responding to your email questions, and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, before we continue, I wanted to mention a resource that I'm not sure everyone is aware of. Quarterly newsletter.
Quarterly newsletter.
Put out by the Zen Center.
In our practice.
In our practice. Mm-hmm. And it's on the website, and I don't know if everybody, you know, has found their way there yet. So if people go to thezencenter.org, there's a lot of little buttons on the left-hand side there, and one of the menu items is called Quarterly Newsletter. And it has some great newsletters there and some archived ones as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and so I would encourage people to go check that out.
Yeah, it's fun. It's people in the who do the practice all the time, and we usually have a theme.
Yes.
And then people write in about that, and yeah, it's fun to... It's like the radio show or like... the email classes, or like going to a retreat or a workshop. It's an opportunity to get an insight into other people's practice and hear how they express what's going on with them and be helpful.
Great. Yeah, and I think the most recent one is on participation,
mm-hmm.
the one that's up there on the website.
Yeah.
Great little stories and, as you said, different perspectives on people's
mm-hmm.
practice. Sure, I have another email question here.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, I just returned from the There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat in Rehoboth Beach. Thank you so much for developing this amazing retreat. I cannot recommend it highly enough for anyone who might be interested. I work on Tuesday nights, but I plan to listen to the archived show when I get home. So here are my two email questions. Number one, I am noticing that I keep getting caught in the duality trap. When I feel good, I think, oh, yeah, I'm doing well, I'm getting it right, this practice is working, etc. And then when I feel bad, I get caught up in trying to, quote, fix that. Should I listen to more of Sherry's CDs, meditate more? What am I doing wrong, etc.? I think I sort of understand that the practice is not about feeling good or bad. It's more of a feeling okay with it all. Yet, from a bit of my experience and from listening to others, it seems that being at center often feels, quote, good, unquote, in a way. Joy is compassion turned inward, right? So how can I tell the difference between these two kinds of feeling good, and how can I stay more often at the balanced, quote, good, unquote, feeling of center without moving into the duality, a, quote, feeling good, unquote, that will lead to a, quote, feeling bad, unquote? Did you catch all those quote-unquotes?
I am so impressed with those quotes and unquotes, I cannot tell you. Yes, because we had that conversation, didn't we, where people say quote-unquote, and then they say what the quote is. And I really want them to say quote at the beginning, say what it is, say unquote at the end.
There you go.
Just did brilliantly.
I was paying attention.
And it worked, didn't it? It really worked. Because I feel clear about what was in quotes and what wasn't.
Good.
So this is good. Now what the writer is on to is practice, right? That's what it comes down to. Because what's being described, I would say, is the difference between the conditional and the unconditional. So when we're at center, in that unconditional place, it really doesn't matter what's going on. There's a sense of acceptance and well-being with that. And that kind of disidentified perspective that says, yes, this is going on now, yes, this is hard, yes, I'm struggling with this, and it's part of life, and it's not personal, and it's no different from what's happening to other people, and it's my best opportunity to approach myself with loving kindness and compassion and that sort of thing. The conditional is, ha, 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 I've arrived, I'm happy, and it's just, you know, we're just headed for such a hideous fall. And then as euphoric as we are from getting what we want and being the right person, that's how miserable we're going to be when we get to the other side of the duality. And there's really, as far as I can tell, there's no shortcut through this. We just have to recognize which is which. And the thing about it is, we're not saying, so when you're in that conditional happiness, you should try to make yourself unhappy. You know, that's not the point. You just recognize it's circumstantial. You know, I tell people all the time, it's no big trick to feel good when things are going your way. You know, and a lot of times things are going our way, because most, you, me, probably everybody listening to the show is pretty privileged. And so a lot of stuff goes our way. It's how we are when things aren't going our way. Can we be willing to say, again, this isn't personal, I'm not being punished, it's just how life is. You know, sometimes things go my way and sometimes they don't, and that's just how it is. So we practice, we pay attention, we watch it, and we begin to see the difference, and we see that kind of giddy, euphoric attitude that comes from getting everything we want, and we just recognize it for what it is, enjoy it, laugh along with it, and know that it's going to pass.
Yes, yes. Great. So seeing the difference between that conditional and the unconditional.
Yeah. And, the unconditional tends to be a little more low-key. You know, it's, it can be ecstatic, but it's not that giddy. So when I use the word happy a lot or happiness a lot to describe center, but it's not that, they just delivered my new Ferrari, I won the lottery. That's not it. It's a happiness that's, it's the difference between the wild, insane, lustful passion of falling in love and being in love in a solid, deep relationship. And, there are people who say, give me the insane lust any day, which is fine. I don't have anything about that. It's just, it doesn't have the same satisfying, lasting quality to it. Yeah. And most people, when they settle into that deeper, more loving, heart-open, connected place, they like being in love, but they wouldn't trade what they have. They'd rather have that being in love in this relationship than to leave this relationship for that kind of roller coaster ride of the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. You know, where ego is in that that search for the next high.
Yes, yes. Great.
Does that person have a part two to that question?
Yes.
Wow.
She has two questions. Question two. I've tried to share some of my experiences with this practice and the retreat with my husband. The content is that...
I was wondering how you knew this was a she. I thought that's very intuitive, but that's a big clue, isn't it? Although not necessarily a guarantee.
Not necessarily. The content is that he really would like us to start trying to have a child, and many parts of me are very ambivalent about that. I tried to explain that I want to just be open for a decision about that to come from center, not from an identified, quote, I, unquote. But then he pointed out that an identified, quote, I, unquote, is making the decision of choosing not to start trying right now.
Well, now that's an interesting assumption, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
We sort of laughed about how confusing the language of all this is, but I do find the whole concept of not making decisions in a world that seems to ask us to make decisions often to be quite confusing. If the idea is just to show up and be willing each day, how does a decision like trying or not trying to have a child actually happen?
Well, that's a very good question, isn't it? And it is true that the world is constantly pressuring us to know something, to decide something, to figure something out, because that's how egocentric karmic conditioning is. It likes to exist outside of life, preferably in conflict with life, asserting and exerting itself against life. It's true. That's how it works. So how do decisions get made? Well, actually, decisions get made exactly the same way, whether we are identified with the ego and trying to make something happen or not. Because the reality is, with something like having a child, you either have a child or you don't have a child. Now, you can say, we intended to, we tried to, therefore we are in control of this. You know, on this day, we've decided, okay, this is it, we're gonna have a child now. Well, maybe you don't have a child.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave us? Or you could say, I will know when it's time for me to be open to that. Now, you still will either have a child or you won't have a child.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the decision about having a child gets made in the same way, in the sense that no decision is ever made. You either have a child or you don't have a child.
I see. So the decision is made.
It's all made up.
One way or the other.
That's right. The idea of making decisions is just something that people cling to keep from feeling, keep from recognizing the fact that they're totally out of control.
Yes, I remember you talking about this on a similar occasion, and you talked about it in the same way, and I think the way you framed it was all of that angst that can come around decision-making is just irrelevant.
It is completely
because life
irrelevant.
Is going to happen. The decision will be made one way or the other.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and we call it a decision because it makes us feel like we have a part in it. And you know, it leads us to a lot of suffering. So, you know, there these people are, and they've decided that they're going to have a child. And then they don't have a child.
Yeah.
Well, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But being open to, is it as a part of our lives, is it our karma, Is it in the cards for us this lifetime to have a child? Well, let's be open to seeing whether or not that's the case.
Wow. Open to life.
Open to life.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of on the side of the wife with this one, because I can't imagine that there's anything more horrible than to do something like bringing a child into the world because somebody else wants that.
Uh-huh.
If two people aren't in agreement about that,
yes.
What a dreadful thing for a child.
Yes.
Now, it doesn't mean that once the child arrives, everybody isn't going to adjust and say, this is great, this is wonderful. But just energetically, spiritually, to be doing that against one's better judgment or with reservations seems unfortunate.
Yes.
So with that kind of situation, it would be lovely with a couple to be able to give one another the kind of time and space required to come to a place of resolution in oneself about that. And, you know, we might say, this happens a lot. It happens more with women, I think. At least I hear about it more with women, where they want to have a child and their partner doesn't want to have a child.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, you need to make a decision because I want to do this, and if you don't want to do it too, then I need to look for somebody who wants to do this with me.
Uh-huh.
And which is fair, you know. To me, that's fair at any rate.
It's honest.
It's honest, and a relationship doesn't mean I get you to agree to something, and then, you know, you have to stick to it for the rest of your life because you agreed to it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean by
Can
that?
Can you say more about that?
Yeah. So it's two people decide that that they are going to live somewhere.
Yeah.
And then the other person, it becomes clear that that's not where he or she wants to be.
Yes.
But they have to live there for the rest of their lives because they have committed to this relationship. And what that relationship means is I have to do what what you want to do.
Yes.
And to me, that's no good. That's
yes.
That's a death sentence. That's not a relationship.
Yes.
So to get to a place of conscious compassion and awareness where the what is most compassionate for all arises, Then the people are in a good position to go forward with whatever and to accept whatever is so.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, of course, you know, I'm a liberation process kind of a gal.
Huh?
So to me, there's nothing more important than that.
Yes.
Nothing more important than learning to come back to center and make whatever decision we make from there. And that if there's a partner, if there's a relationship, if they're children, if they're whatever, that kind of commitment, then it has to include everybody.
Yes.
Or it's not going to work for anybody.
Yes, yes.
The place that's most compassionate for all is always available to us. And sometimes it takes a little sitting still and processing through whatever is keeping us from recognizing it to get to that point.
Yes, yes. Thank you, Sherry. And the last part of the email... Thanks so much for having this radio show available as a support. I'm finding this practice to be very exciting, but also a bit mysterious and uncommon in society. So this support really helps. Gesho from a listener in Pennsylvania.
Mostly.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back with you. Coming up next on Open Air, in our third and final segment of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious compassionate awareness. We'll be responding to your email questions and taking your calls. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back with you.
To speak with our show hosts or guests during the live show, call us toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. Everywhere else, call 001-858-268-3068.
Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry, I have more email questions. People are at their keyboard. Also, let me give out the phone number just in case. Toll-free in North America, 888-514-2100. The phone lines are open, and we'd love to talk with you today. Here's email question. Hi, I attended the retreat at the Seven Springs Center in September. I got tremendous benefit from that retreat and subsequently from daily sitting meditation practice. I hear a lot about compassion and talk about it, but don't hear a lot of discussion about love. Like many others, I come from a Christian background where this is a main theme. I believe that spirituality is a pursuit of ending suffering and being fully human. As this is the case for me, love is part of that human experience. What does Buddhism say about love? From a listener in Tennessee.
Well, of course, I don't know what Buddhism says, actually.
so
we're left with what Sherry Huber said. Just a step down. One of the things that I'm fond of encouraging people to consider is that willingness is what's there when we don't want to. So if I'm going along in life and I'm counting on wanting to get me through, I'm going to be in big trouble, because even with something like meditation, I start off, you know, this is great, this is what I want to do, this is going to end my suffering, this is, you know, it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's all of these things, and then I don't feel like it. I don't want to. Okay? Resistance kicks in, and there I am. But if I have a relationship with willingness, then I know that I don't have to want to. So I like to compare it to having a baby. You know, I want to have a baby, but I never realized that that would mean I didn't get to sleep at night. So, you know, I want to sleep. But then there's the baby, and the baby gets hungry and needs clean pants and all of these things. So it doesn't matter that I want to sleep. Of course I want to sleep. Everybody would rather sleep at night, probably, than get up and do this stuff. But I'm willing to do it.
Yes.
Because in the big picture, I want to take care of this child.
Yes.
So willingness gives me something to go on when that, in the, you know, just right here in this little tiny piece of life, I don't feel like it. And to me, compassion and love have a very similar relationship. I've always, now I understand that there's unconditional love, and I use that expression to try to point at something that is different from what we, what society usually talks about and thinks about as love.
Yes.
Which is just, yeah. You know, there really should be two different words. That's
yes.
what we really need. And
I just thought about movies when you said... Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, I mean, we see it everywhere. That what is called love just, it, from my perspective, has nothing to do with what I'm talking about when I'm talking about love. When I'm what I'm talking about when I use that word is the equivalent of willingness.
Yeah.
It's not dependent on how I feel in this moment. It's not something that's going to change. It's not. I'm not going to get over it. And so, for me, a better word, a word that takes us out of all of that conditioned society horsepucky, is compassion.
Uh-huh.
And compassion, for me, has that sense of oneness.
Yes.
It's not me, separate self, relating to you, separate self, in my conditioned ways. It's an affinity. It's a different way to use this word than we usually use it. But it's an identity. It's
uh-huh.
It's oneness. It's a wholeness. It's that place that understands that nothing can happen to you that doesn't happen to me.
Yes.
And so often we see love being there in you know, in great enthusiasm. And then when that enthusiasm passes, when the attention turns to something else, or, again, I just don't feel like it, then the love isn't there. So I've never had a lot of enthusiasm, personally, for love, simply because it's so Hallmark card, Kodak moment, confused with lust, with passion, with karma, and to me, compassion is a synonym for, well, it's not even. It is the unifying force in the universe. It is the essence. It is what we are. It is all that is. And it transcends all of our egocentric notions, all of our wants and desires and likes and dislikes. It just takes us to a transcendent place, which I would rather we were focused on,
yes.
rather than trying to sort out, well, is this conditional love or unconditional love?
Yes.
Let's just pick another word that we know. It's like a code. It means...
Huh?
It means unconditional love.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. It's not talking about It's not talking about that romantic here today, gone tomorrow. It's bigger, deeper than that.
Great. Thank you, Sherry. Sherry, we have another caller.
Wow. We better say hello.
Better say hello quickly, and if we don't finish the call today, we'll continue next week. Good evening. I'd like to welcome you to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Thank you. I wanted to ask a question sort of following up on the question earlier from the email.
Could you speak up just a little bit, please? I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
Sure. How's that?
Perfect.
Oh, good. I wanted to, I'm looking at decision-making as well.
Uh-huh.
And I heard what you had said to the other caller about really that there isn't a separate I making the decision.
Or if there is, you're probably headed for big trouble.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm finding is I'm in a place in my life where the things that I had planned, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
However you say the quotes.
Right. Right.
And
that, quote, I planned, unquote.
Exactly what she said.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching the part of me that's afraid of making the wrong decision, which is not what I'm, it's not where we're going.
Uh-huh.
And I'm also watching how in letting that go, there's just all sorts of stuff to choose from.
Yes.
So to speak. And there are all sorts of possibilities everywhere.
Yes. Yes. And so if you're going to get beaten up for doing the wrong thing, you will always do the wrong thing.
Hmm.
Yeah?
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. But if you're not going to get beaten up, if you can't make a mistake, what difference does it make what you do?
Well, and it's funny because the next piece for me then is if I really take that on
mm-hmm.
as I cannot make a mistake,
mm-hmm.
then the next thing that happens is, well, what looks fun?
Exactly.
What looks interesting?
Well, then what do I want to do?
Right.
Uh-huh. Here you are in this great, big, huge playground. What do you want to play first?
And it's interesting because what happens next typically is there are so many fun things that I can't choose.
Mm-hmm.
Or some fear has come in, I project, and there's nothing there. So nothing seems fun. So there's this inaccessibility of, well, the sky's the limit. What would you like to do if you could do anything? There's this blank space.
Yes.
And there are all sorts of other things involved that are a part of my process, too. But so I'm watching how...
So there are some fun games to play with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So so you have people in your life who know you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you think, well, okay, I could do anything in the world, so what do I want to do? And there's a blank. So you just pick five people
mm-hmm.
who you like and sort of trust, and you ask them, you say, you know, I can't figure out what to do because every time I look, I just get this blank.
Okay.
What do you think I should do? Write down what they say. Take the best 3 out of 5.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah. Watch conditioning go banana land.
Mm-hmm. That's sort of like just picking or picking your own ideas out of a hat.
Oh, yes. Yes. And always have a lot of ideas. You know, so you've got an afternoon. You can do anything you want. And you've been waiting for it, you know, you've been so excited because you've got this whole afternoon and then you can't think of a single thing to do. It's always good to have a hat full of ideas. You just pull one out and you do it. You watch conditioning go crazy because, of course, this is supposed to be an occasion for torture.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's built up as, this is going to be so wonderful, oh, I can't wait for this to happen. But if you do wholeheartedly whatever it is that you pull out of the hat, you're bound to have a good time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let us know what happens, okay?
I certainly will.
All right.
Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio for our first show in 2006. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's do it again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.